Right, how about that?
How about a folded ocean, guys? How about a folded ocean? Wow.
So, like, I just want to say, incredible. So rare. So few people have gotten to see that movie. So, just Ben, thank you so much for letting us play that. It just rocked once again. So basically, yeah. Thank you everyone for coming out. I think the first question I want to ask is, I kind of see this film as like a bridge. You just shot. You're in post-production right now for a feature film. You shot in Scotland?
Ireland, yeah.
In Ireland?
Yeah.
Okay, you shot a feature film in Ireland that you're in post-production for right now.
Yeah.
It's a film you directed.
Yep.
And you were the lead VFX artist on Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah, I was one of the leads on that. Yeah.
One of the leads, okay.
You guys heard of that movie?
You guys hear that one? You guys see that one?
Heard about this?
Yeah.
Hear about this? You see this?
So you made the short in between that VFX work and directing the feature, right?
Yeah, so I basically had this period in the summer before going to do that feature, which was this past fall, where I was like obsessed with just getting my own camera and just starting to make things.
Yeah.
And so I shot that, finished the visual effects on it, but nothing else. And I submitted to Sundance, and I just prayed they wouldn't watch it, because I just like put a link up to like nonsense basically. And then while I was in Ireland, I was like updating the link with like the sound mix, and then luckily they don't watch it for like months, and then it got in the Sundance, which is awesome. But
Hell yeah, so
I was in Ireland kind of finishing this, and the movie in Ireland was very out of the blue, and I just sort of was like went for it. But yeah.
Okay, so the genesis, I guess, maybe start the idea to start do this project in the first place came to you at what point, and where what was it?
Well, so like I have this feature film that I'm trying to make right now, which would be very funny to go from making no movies for like several years to potentially making two movies in 1 year. But I couldn't get anyone to want to make it. And so then I was sort of doing that thing where you just look at what money you have in your bank account, and I was just going to pay for it myself. And so I got really invested in trying to figure out the really cheap version of this film. And then I was going to shoot a proof of concept of that film. And then someone's like, well, if it sucks, no one will want to make the longer one. It's like, that's a good point. So then I made this, which is adjacent to this like feature that I'm, that's like the same kind of style of codependent horror film.
Something we didn't talk about in the episode, but you were mentioning right before we did the event, is you work with your brother a lot.
Yeah.
And it's a Coen Brothers podcast.
Yeah.
So do you just want to talk about that process? And
what's it like to work with
a sibling?
To co-direct with a brother.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this film I shot in Ireland, it was the first time I haven't worked with my brother on a project like that. We'd done a film together in 2016 called The Trust, and wrote it together, directed it together. And so, yeah, it was definitely my first. This is the first thing I had truly directed alone. He did the sound on it though. I made him hold the boom mic, and then he was gonna do the one in Ireland with me, but he couldn't because his career has taken a different turn. But yeah, it is very interesting working with a co-director, and a lot of the myths of the Coen brothers being like psychically linked, like some of the actors, you'll see them interviewed, they're like, oh, they have the same thoughts or whatever. And of course I hear that and I just think of, well, no, it's just you have to get on the same page about everything before you're on set looking like a total idiot, you know, disagreeing with one another. So that's the modicum of insight I feel like I have working with my brother, is like that it just puts the onus on prep. And I think the types of movies you make are the types that you can actually agree on, you know, whereas I think like something like this is a much harder thing for two people to agree on.
That's really interesting. I think that's an original insight.
Thank you.
So much of what we talked about on the show was like setup and payoff with effects and setting up with actors, like with performance and pathos, and then deploying like the visuals of effect shots, yeah, like at the right point and the right one at the right time. Like, this film feels like it's like a treatise, like it's like a thesis statement on that, basically. Like, how are you deploying these? How are you setting them up?
Yeah, so I did storyboard it, I did tests, and I thought the challenge of it would be, can you make a sort of realist film, like kind of this like handheld, almost like Dogma feeling film, but have these visual effects show up and not just totally bump you. And I think what I learned was that I had to get into the body melting stuff faster. So there was like an extra scene that's not in the final film because I was like, oh shit, like it's like telling a joke. You can't be, if the punchline has nothing to do with the setup, people are like, oh, I didn't know I was in a world with talking ducks, so this isn't that funny to me. Whereas if you'd been like, a talking duck walks into the bar, if that makes any fucking sense what I just said. But that's basically what I learned, was that visual effects, I think, can work in something like this, but you have to find a way, a clever way to front load it, where it's like, if it's not in the very first scene where you're like, you're in a world where people melt into each other, it's got to come like pretty quick and then let people acclimate. I think if there had been like, you know, 10 minutes of a mumblecore movie and then they start melting into each other, you'd be like, okay, like you just realize how inefficient it kind of was.
Yeah, at the end, I was, even though I'd seen it before, I was kind of wondering if they were going to like melt one more time at the end.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I'm very insecure about that last shot because I'm like, I just want people thinking like, is he going to make us go through this shit again? So I'm glad that that's what it does.
No, I think it's great because you put the last note like on performance and keep it real.
Yeah, and they do such a great job. So Annabelle and John are a real couple. They are... she directs her own stuff and they're comedians, so it's like it was a little outside of their normal stuff that they do, and I thought they did like a great job.
Were these any of these images, did you find them while you're, well, can you talk a little bit about the tool that you used to make most of the more stuff, but then also just like, are you thinking of these things before you're making them, or are you finding them like using the tools as you're working it?
Well, it's very funny because it connects to Mr. Bernardo's film. So the way I have met Ray is because this individual made a feature film that Ray was the visual effects lead on. And I had been working on this short that there's kind of a corollary effect, I would say, not really, but like enough that I knew that the stuff I was testing out on this would be relevant to you guys trying to figure out that sequence. But essentially at first I thought it was just going to all be CGI, like 3D stuff. And I wasn't really thinking that I could pull it off with just 2D compositing, because like, it's really very recent that you could.
And you want to explain that? Just like a
the difference
two
between those two
yeah,
things?
Difference, yeah.
So 2D compositing is coming from the sort of tradition of visual effects from the beginning, which is that you're dealing with flat images that you are cutting out parts of and feathering, and you're just creating a, where you're tracking something in, but there's nothing 3D about it. There's no Z axis. Whereas 3D is like everything from Marvel movies to Pixar movies. It's completely, it's geometry. I don't know. I'm bad at explaining it.
No, I think that made sense. Yeah.
So essentially a film like this where they're twisting around, there's a lot of shit going on. You wouldn't necessarily immediately go, oh yeah, I'll be able to track things, because your program doesn't know to interpret anything as being three-dimensional. But there's these really kind of elegant pieces of software that have been invented. This one was by a company called Boris. They do a plugin called Mocha. It's called Meshwarp, and essentially it's a 2D tracker that is using a ton of points to figure out the contours of something, such that you can kind of fake the sense that you'd use it to put a logo on a t-shirt, a tattoo on a face, that sort of thing. And so I did a test with it just to see, and it was horrific. And I thought, oh, okay, this works, and I haven't seen this. And so I had done 3D tests in Blender with like skin and hands and shit, and it looked good, but it would have been this was faster.
Did you see that before you wrote the script or after?
This is actually a little lesson from the Daniels that I learned a long time ago, where we were pitching music videos and they would pitch crazy shit. I'd be like, aren't you afraid to pitch these things? How do you know how to do this thing you just pitched? And like, oh, we don't. Mm-hmm. I'd be like, okay. And they're like, yeah, no, it terrifies us, but we figure it out. And we only do it if it scares us. So I've always had that mentality. So I just like come up with the idea, the untenable idea, and then like start storyboarding and stuff like that. And then I used to do really irresponsible things where I'd like book a job and like get like pretty much on set and being like, oh, this, I'm insane. This isn't going to work. But this one, I actually did the homework and I storyboarded, I did tests. And yeah, so it was informed by what I knew was possible.
And how did you utilize YouTube for this film?
YouTube?
Yeah, like you're a big proponent of the University of YouTube. Like, what did you not know at the beginning of making this film that you learned just by watching stuff on YouTube?
Yeah, everything. So it's funny because I guess as like the lead visual effects artist on this movie that went on to win Best Picture, it's very funny because everything I did in it, I don't take a moment to like figure something out. I just Google it poorly, and there's some charismatic person who is for some reason like made a video teaching everyone how to do this thing. And so that's how I work. Like, I just like the second I don't know something, I'm just like, how do I track a blah, blah, blah. And it's, I think that's the greatest wealth that we all have right now, is that the promise of that is come to fruition. If that's something you're interested in, and I think it's so this short, I kind of wanted to encourage people to be like, think of this as a tool that shouldn't be scary. It's onerously expensive if you need other people to do it, but it can help with storytelling. And this is a bit of a flashy example of it because it's like so effectsy, but there's plenty of invisible effects that can take the edge off your, you know, 2-day shoot where you're like, I have to get all this stuff right. It's like there's plenty of little things that you can learn very easily online that will inform how you shoot and how you use your day.
Do you ever find yourself shooting something bad because you know you can make it look good later?
Oh yeah, like there's shots in this that are punched. I mean, this, it was a very, you know, there's shots where I would punch in like 400% and that would like denoise it and then regrain it and then do all this like crazy shit. Yeah, I'm like not afraid of any of that. I shot it on this camera called, it's the FX6 for anyone who's like into that sort of thing. And it's for what you get, it's an incredibly inexpensive camera. Like when we were starting out, DSLRs came out and they were great and you'd shoot things on them, but there was always a sense that it was like working against you kind of. And then I hadn't really checked in with all that prosumer stuff for 10 years because I was like, just Alexa, like we gotta wish you with Alexa or whatever, you know. And then I checked in with it and like they've been working on this shit, like, you know. And I think it has to do with
them. They got it figured out.
They figured it out. I do think it has to do with them. This is unsubstantiated, but I think it has to do with the fact that there is a marketplace where people want to film themselves and make high end content. So like I was the camera operator, the lighter, I didn't have an AC, like all the rack focusing was just me tapping their faces on a screen, which like, you know, the days of this are like gone, which is awesome. And yeah.
Other than the opener, this movie has basically no dialogue.
Yeah.
So just talk about like what it was like to plan a story where you knew it was going to be told that way and then getting your actors prepped for that kind of a endeavor.
Yeah, I think we ended up kind of improvising around some of the stuff. The main kind of challenge that I wasn't anticipating was them discovering this thing is happening. And I think it's because we see so many high concept films, we kind of take for granted the oh shit moment. And it's very easy to end up with a scene where you're just having two actors be like, what the fuck? What the fuck? Like how? And so I thought, well, that's unfair to make actors play something that doesn't exist, that they have no frame of reference for, that no one has a frame of reference for. And so, yeah, the dialogue, I just felt like it was very minimally written, but then like on the day, because it's also just me, it's me, the camera and the two actors. And so I was just sort of like, and I knew I was going to jump cut the whole thing anyways. So I don't believe in putting up anything that might make your, like, I just want everything to be easy and whatever aesthetic can possibly make performances seem natural, I'll go for it. And so that's kind of where it came from. So a lot of improv around these sort of like scenes I'd written. The only line that was like in the script was when she says, I don't want to look at my legs all day. That was a line. But everything else was just kind of, we knew the scene and we'd rehearse it and be like, that's a good line, say that or say this.
Cool.
And I did the whole movie in Ireland that way. Like we were just improvising the whole movie. And so Nicolas Cage is the star of that movie. And we'd literally just stand in the backyard and just like rewrite the scene and then go in and shoot it. And no one told us to stop doing that. So that's how we made the movie.
Did he like working that way?
Oh yeah, he's great. I mean, that's like, I love actors and I think that they're the true like gold in anything, because they're obviously talented, but they also contain multitudes. And so, you know, every project I've been part of that was like really good from that perspective, you walk away being like, well, the actor should be credited for writing this because like they are writers. And actually I did do a project where the actor ended up getting full writing credit, which was a script that I didn't have anything to do with directing. It's a Netflix movie that hasn't come out yet with Benicio Del Toro. And so I was just like in a room with Benicio Del Toro for 2 months writing with him and like being blown away at his profound wisdom and like how much better he was than me at writing. So yeah, I'm a huge proponent of like getting actors to like participate in that process and then trying to get them like recognized for it later.
Sick. Okay, well, does anyone in the audience have some questions? Does anyone want to ask a question of Ben? We hung up, is it? Do we have a mic that can travel out?
Am there? I holding the like you can for pass other people one. Mic?
Yeah, but I want to know. This one, I'll
pass the mic. The question is, how many days did you shoot on this movie that we just watched or in the one in Ireland? Okay.
This was
shooting days on both projects.
We shot this in one day. Well, thank you. We thought it was like 11 pages of script and I thought it would be like two days because like it should be, but then we just fucking cranked it all out one day and I was like, oh, okay. So then I'm lying a little bit. The second day, because we already planned, we kind of were like just ordering Postmates and like reshooting like a scene that I got to think about the night before. It was very leisurely. It was the chillest shoot ever. And then Ireland, we shot that whole thing in 20 days. And it was complete madness. I took from this like a love of operating the camera, and that's what made it possible. So, I operated, and then Frank Mobilio, who's a great DP, he was the DP. And so, but a lot of stuff was only possible because we did two cameras, and it's like this. It's like all handheld, and yeah. Oh no.
The question is if you had Nick Cage on set for the whole time.
I did the first film I did with him, we had him the whole time, and that was like a 22-day shoot or something like that. But this one, he was just coming off of another movie that sounds awesome that A24 is doing with Christopher Borgli. Do you know who? It sounds great. And so he had just finished that, and then he flew out, and we had a week with him. And then he wasn't there the whole time. But technically, he was there for half the shoot because it was only 20 goddamn days, and it was like.
Were you really like judicious about the close-ups and then using a stand-in, or did you like do all of the scenes?
My question is, were you economical with shooting reactions, close-ups, or if you used a stand-in for Nick Cage?
Yeah, no, we definitely had a stunt double, stand-in. There was actually like significantly a. There was appropriate scenes where that would be fine and it wouldn't be actors having to play against someone who wasn't him. It'll make sense if you see the movie. He gets hurt. All right. Spoiler alert. I forget what I was about to say about that.
Any other questions?
Let's give them.
Oh, yeah. Killer film, by the way. Killer Thank effects. You. Did this idea come about while you were listening to opera, or did that happen later?
It was later. It's funny. This friend of mine is in this band called Boy Harsher. Do you know Boy Harsher?
Yeah.
Are you in Boy Harsher?
Actually, no, I'm not.
It's just two people.
I saw their short film, though. That'd
be impossible. But and so I was temping it with their music, and I was building up my courage to ask this friend of mine to use their music. But it was like making it so sexy. And I was like, that's not the vibe. Like, it was playing too much to like the kind of inherent tone. And so, I just started thinking about romantic themes and what would be in contrast. And I'd seen Rigoletto years ago. And I just remember it having these really great pieces that would speak to that contrast that I was looking for. So yeah, it was definitely a later thing.
Cool. And then I just wanted to ask quickly, did you use like those like really skinny lens that can like go up and close, or are those all punched in?
Yeah, just super punched in.
Wow.
I shot the whole thing on two lenses. It's a 14 to 24 Sigma, which I liked because it does with the autofocus for the Sony camera. And then a 24 to 78. And I'll just like punch into hell. I don't care.
It's awesome. Yeah.
I'm doing that on this Nicolas Cage movie too, and I just know I'm gonna catch hell because I'm like punched in like 500% on things, and they're like, "This is supposed to be a real movie, but it doesn't fucking matter."
It's awesome.
Okay, yeah.
With a lot of like Japanese horror, when you're seeing something truly disturbing, they will play with like lighting, contrast, make something very like a dark scene or black and white that allows the viewer to be able to like process that they're seeing something disturbing without looking away, makes it a bit more easier to see. And I wondered, did you think about like lighting in some way similar to that? Or like you talk about like zooming in close up to like let the audience keep looking at your effects.
I kind of just wanted it to feel like as naturalistic, almost like half of it's just like a nature documentary kind of thing. Just observing this strange creature that's made out of two people trying to survive. That sounds pretentious, but that's what I was trying to do. And I lit the whole thing with one light, one of those amazing LED panels they have now. Not these, but like the one that you can practically like staple to a wall. And so I just walk around with this light, and I just used it to fill in the negative side mostly because I had this big natural source coming in. So that's not a proper answer to your question. The answer would be no, I wanted the lighting to be quite mundane, just real seeming. I'm obsessed with Dogma 95 and Lars von Trier, and I just wanted to feel like there was absolutely no, pretense.
Sick.
I had a quick question I forgot. I'm so sorry. It's super quick.
It's right there.
Did you show this?
Do it on mic,
sorry. Did you show this movie to Nicolas Cage, and what did he think of it if he saw it?
I think I did. He's no, I'll send it to him after this though. I'm sure he would dig it. But yeah, he's a great appreciator of stuff like this, so I think he'd like it.
Thank you.
Amazing, very crazy. I love it. Was there an image that like originated the idea of the bodies together, like whether it's the arms or the face, you know what I mean? Or was it just like, we'll find it?
It's really hard. I've had a hard time tracing back where I first thought of it. I just remember that the way I feel like creativity works best for me is that, you know, my mind's just always presenting these images, and then I like some of them appeal to me, and then I try to like become my own therapist and just figure out, well, why do you keep leaning towards this stuff? I don't try to like pursue themes or something. Like I just try to embrace that subconscious part and then kind of try to understand it. But I do remember that I had this idea of this couple melting together at the arms, and then and it was really, it's really just silly, simple story thought of like, okay, they melted through the arms. Then what happens next? Well, they got to melt through the face. Okay, then what happens next? Well, shit, where do you go from there? They've already melted in. Oh, they'll melt through each other. And so through this kind of very just reaching into my just instincts, then I kind of was like, well, why is that something that is something I want to do or show? Right. And then I kind of figured out why.
Cool. You did good.
Thank you.
Very cool. One more question? Tall? Let's do it.
Oh, back there. Two more questions.
Two more questions, guys. Okay.
Me or Charlie. You, Paul?
Charlie.
I was really struck by the part when they first realize their arms are stuck together. They react really chill. Like, they don't freak out. And I was wondering where that choice came from in the script.
Yeah, so, like, I had... It wasn't in the script. It was like we shot on the, so that was what we shot additionally the next day was her waking up and seeing it alone first. So in the original conception, she saw it and then immediately woke him up and they freaked out. And it was that thing I said earlier. It just felt like an impossible ask. And so I wanted to like skip ahead to that part that I could relate to, which are these like two like over intellectual people who are like turning it into who are settling into like their petty coupleness to try to figure this thing out. So in my mind, it's like the probably hour-long mishigas is like done, and now they're trying to like figure out what to do. and getting on each other's nerves, and you're still seeing like that he's really not handling his shit. He's like crying and throwing up. And so yeah, I did try to do the freak out, and it just didn't ring true to me. It seemed like I was, and it felt like something where people watching it would be like, okay, yeah, we get it. They're like, they're freaking out. Like, what's next? You know, it's kind of like when like a genie shows up in a movie or like, you know, and you're like, you always have to have that like 5 minutes of the person not believing it, right? Which can be really fun, but there is a part where it's like, all right, yeah, it's happening, you know. Bill Murray, like it's same day, let's go. No, that's the worst example because that's like a masterpiece.
Yeah, perfectly timed.
Horrible example.
Just going back to something you mentioned earlier, that your brother, I think I remember you saying, is responsible for the sound effects as well, and I was wondering if you could speak up, because I found that the sound really enhanced the visual effects, and I was wondering how, if you could speak on how that came about, and I really appreciated that aspect.
Oh, thanks.
You felt like the sound added a lot to the visuals, and
you know, was it just like, oh, we need a balloon, you know, gurgling sound now, that would be funny, or like, this doesn't work, how do you arrive
this
at
this? Is actually a good, for all filmmakers, this is an interesting part of it, because so my brother recorded the sound on set, so there was like none of that, and then it all had to be sound designed.
Yeah, because Foley is not literal.
Yeah,
always. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut it off. Sorry. I hadn't had a mic in a second, so I had to say some bullshit.
I was having those same thoughts of like, well, what do I have to? Yeah, like I have to go to the supermarket and get a bunch of like celery sticks and do like what you see in like when people talk about how you sound design things, and I was like, oh, I need to get like. I've done in the past, which you sign up for like a online like archive of sounds. And I found one that is like very inexpensive. I think it's called Soundly. I very much encourage this because it's one where it's basically looks like Spotify. You type in whatever keyword you think of, you listen to those sounds, and then you can drag it straight into Premiere. Like there's no like saving, whatever, or like I used to like rip things off YouTube. I'm sure everyone's done that. And then you're like bringing it in and trying to get it. So I sound designed it in like a day, like really fucking fast. And yeah, it did elevate it a lot. And I guess it was kind of like it was the easiest part of the whole process, was just like putting these gross sounds in. Mm-hmm. And it like really like, and because I think I worked so hard on the gross visual part that it was like the sound was like bailing me out. And it was like, yeah, like if you just put the right crunchy sound here, it's like you're good.
Well, great. I think that's an excellent note to end on. And if anyone has any other questions, we'll be across the street at TJ Burns. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Ben, so much for being on the show.
Thank you, man.
And for showing this incredible film in the gallery tonight.
Yeah, thanks to the Dunn Kunsthal Gallery as well.
Yeah, thank you, Dunn Kunsthal, and everyone will be across the street hanging out. Thank you so much.
Woo-woo!